This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and on each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan on to talk about Voyager. To launch the podcast, I'm doing a series of episodes that are each focused on a different Voyager crew member. On this show, I am talking about one of my absolute favorite characters, the Doctor, with one of my favorite humans, James Dempsey. Hi, James. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Jean, and thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It's really exciting to talk about Voyager with you. I know that you have recently done a rewatch, so I've been wanting to have a show that on which we could talk about Voyager instead of talking about what we usually talk about, our podcast, The Weekly Review, where we talk about productivity. And I have a hard time fitting Star Trek watching into the productivity rubric.
Yes.
It's a great relaxation technique, but unless your job is watching Star Trek, it's probably not a productivity enhancer. But anyway, before we get started, why don't you let the listeners know a bit about you?
Well, hi, my name is James Dempsey, and I work as a software developer writing iOS and Mac apps. I also speak at technical conferences, and I worked at Apple for 15 years, showing up about 18 months before Steve Jobs's return and leaving about 6 weeks before he passed away. So it was a pretty amazing time to be at Apple. And for the last, I guess it's 7 or 8 years or so, I've been out on my own doing consulting, contracting, training, speaking. And the thing I might be best known for is as the lead of maybe the world's nerdiest band, James Dempsey and the Breakpoints. We sing humorous but informational songs about doing programming, which is a lot of fun. Gene, you're a conditional Breakpoint, so you've played with us many a time.
Yes. Yes, I love the Breakpoints. In fact, that's how I got to know you. I met you at a conference, and you very graciously invited me to play guitar on one of your songs for that Breakpoint jam session. And I was pretty much hooked, even though as a non-software developer, I think I understand about 10% of the lyrics. I don't care. I just enjoy singing them.
Well, I do try to make them catchy. So
they are.
That's fun. Yeah, that's how we got to know each other. And then we also started doing our big show during the week of Apple's developer conference as a benefit concert for App Camp for Girls. So we've known each other now for a good number of years. So
yes,
it's really, really great to be here on one of your early episodes of this podcast.
I sure do appreciate it because, as you know, getting a podcast going, it's fun and exciting, and it takes a little work to get it off the ground. So it's fun having friends helping. And also a friend like you who is a Star Trek fan, as I know. So do you remember when you first started watching Star Trek?
I do. I started watching Star Trek in grade school, watching like reruns and syndication of the original series. And we used to play Star Trek like at playtime when we'd be out in the schoolyard. And because my name is James, I always got to be the captain.
Wow.
Because of James T. Kirk. So for some reason, it just always defaulted. Although really, I think everybody really wanted to play Spock.
Yeah.
Like when we'd play. And yeah, just as a kid, I was a big fan. I had the those Star Trek action figures, like the 12-inch ones. There was like this cool play set that had this transporter.
Really?
You put somebody in it and you'd spin it around, and then depending on which button you pressed, it was all mechanical. If you pressed one button, it would end with the chamber showing the person that you put in. But if you hit the other button, it would be empty. And then I think there was a little door in the back where they would like exit the Enterprise. It was pretty cool.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. You don't have that anymore, do you?
It must be somewhere at the house where I grew up.
Okay.
So I would love to find it and put it on eBay probably,
because yeah.
I don't really have a need for it at the moment. But then in colleges when Next Generation first came out, uh-huh. and I remember like every Sunday was when it was on, at least I guess it was UPN was the network mm-hmm. at the time. You know, we'd all gather around and watch the latest episode. And so, yeah, just been a big fan pretty much my entire life.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I definitely watched the original series as a kid. But then by the time Next Generation came around, I was in a no TV phase of my life. I was in graduate school, as I call it, the dark ages, where I don't know a single song from that period. I don't know the TV shows or the movies. And it's a big hole in my trivia knowledge.
Pop culture black hole.
Pop culture. I'm making up for it now, though. I have, you know, binge watched all the series. And I, you know, of course, I like Next Generation very much, but Voyager really hooked me at the time that I watched it. I had only heard about it, and then I was, you know, as usual, like out sick for a week and looking for something to watch while recovering. And I thought, oh, yeah, there's that show, Voyager. Do you remember when Voyager came out? Like, did you have a TV back then? Maybe you can enlighten me.
I did have a TV back then, definitely. So I think I remember watching the premiere of Voyager.
Yeah.
But the first time around, I didn't watch it, you know, every week. I think by that time, with however many years of Star Trek The Next Generation, and then also Deep Space Nine, I think I was kind of going through a little bit of just Star Trek overload.
Yeah, that was a lot of Star Trek all at once after having years of no Star Trek to have three shows. And it's kind of the situation we're in now with Star Trek Discovery, that it's awesome to have a new show and they're doing spinoffs of that show. But I wonder if people will get burned out and one of those shows will suffer therefore. See, I have a theory about Voyager, and that people who haven't watched every episode or almost every episode the way they watch, say, TNG when it first came out, that mm-hmm. or Deep Space Nine for that matter, that if you just dip in here and there, it's just not going to be that satisfying of an experience to watch it, and that that's why people think that they don't like it. Mm-hmm. But they have dipped in, something's come up, they've watched an episode. I mean, there's bad episodes of Voyager, there's no doubt about that. But I don't think there's significantly more bad episodes of Voyager than there are bad episodes, say, of TNG or Deep Space Nine. But if you like a show, you sort of roll with that. Or maybe you skip it and go to the next one. But if you haven't really gotten engaged with the show, you think, well, maybe I'll just skip this altogether. What was your impression of Janeway?
I like Janeway as a captain very much. I like her character. I came to like her a great deal as I watched the entire series.
Of course, on this episode, we want to talk about the Doctor. And I think the Doctor is one of the most popular Star Trek characters, period, and certainly on Voyager. He's often cited by people as their favorite or second favorite character. What do you like about the Doctor?
Well, two things I'd say. One is just the arc of his character over the show, mm-hmm. over the entire series. He's the character that has the most amount of change, I think, in evolution, which is enjoyable to watch as it progresses season to season. But also just as a character, he's got, I don't want to call it flawed, but he's the most, he's got so much variety.
Yes.
I mean, he can be like such a pompous blowhard kind of guy, but he can also like, which is amusing to watch, but he's also struggling to these big questions about, like, what is a sentient being and does he exist or is he just a hologram? And also, he's just got such a snarky character, right? So he's just very entertaining to watch. And then taking one step back, thinking about the actor playing him, being versatile enough to play him in all those situations, I think is also fantastic.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I think that it is a challenging role for somebody to be that, as you put it, snarky, and also, you know, his superior attitude, certainly more so in the beginning of the series than by the end, is off-putting, yet we do like him and you know, really come to love that character over time. I mean, he does provide a lot of the comic relief for the show that we like versus Neelix is supposed to be funny, but he becomes annoying more than funny in many of the ways he's used.
The other thing I do like about the Doctor is that he does get played for comedy often.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's the one where they're first experimenting with the mobile emitters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they don't get the scale right. So he's yes. showing up as like this little mini doctor, which is just, it's such a goofy, it's so goofy, but it's very funny.
Yeah.
And of course he's so pompous that it's like this total indignity to him.
Yeah.
But they also can take him from that comic role to also playing like very serious issues, like issues of personhood, right?
Yes.
What is he legally in the Federation? There's that episode where he writes the Hollow novel and the ownership of it is kind of under contention and what have you. I think the other thing I like about him is that they're able to scale that wide range from the serious to the very funny.
It's true. Yeah, there's some Doctor episodes I can't really watch because they're so emotional. There's the one with the pretend family. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. I do remember that one.
So where he programs a holodeck program to give him kind of the Leave It to Beaver family.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the dad, the working dad. And he has the housewife and the two very well-behaved kids. And Torres says, yeah, I don't think so. let's make a few modifications. And the next thing you know, he has a very untidy household and a very rebellious preteen mm-hmm. kid who hangs out with Klingon kids. I mean, it's like
it's yeah, I do remember that one. And it's that again, that one was both funny, his reactions to all of it, but also kind of had some serious moments in it too. So
yeah. I mean, once he gets involved with this more complicated family, and, you know, more complicated things happen. I don't really want to spoil it, but it's downright sad. And I don't really want to see that again because I don't like being sad watching Star Trek. The other one, there's an episode called Latent Image where he has a part of his memory is missing and he doesn't know why, but he tries to figure it out and he feels like he's been the victim of some kind of conspiracy of the crew. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that he had to make a medical triage decision that was so heart-wrenching, his program couldn't handle it. And that was really, that was very serious. And that's a storyline that could be anywhere. That doesn't have to be in space or with holograms mm-hmm. or anything. Except for the fact that you could rewrite somebody's memory so they could leave out the part that was really traumatic for them.
If I recall correctly, they left that episode where they kind of left him alone in the holodeck or they'd come and check on him to kind of work it out for himself
mm-hmm.
because he kept discovering that they had removed the memory and repeating the process. So they kind of had to let him sort of let his software evolve on its own, which I thought was interesting.
That's right.
And of course, it cleared itself up by the next episode.
Well, yes. and she'll never be spoken of again.
Exactly. But That is the other thing I found really interesting about the doctor is that they could always go in and his matrix would be falling apart at times, but they could always add some new subroutines. And it was kind of like you could try something out with him and then go back to the previous state at the end of an episode often if you didn't like the way something turned out.
I think that is kind of the hard part to get your head around as a fan of the show is how many things they could do with the doctor without seeming to have many consequences. And how would they do them anyway? How would a subroutine give you, I don't know. You're a computer programmer. You could probably do it though, James, huh?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it was always, I mean, even though it's science fiction, I think there was always kind of that suspension of disbelief there too.
Yeah.
That, oh, you just add some subroutines and now suddenly you can do X, Y, and Z.
So, James, I did ask you to watch a specific episode of Voyager, that one of the Doctor episodes, so that we would be fresh on at least one. The episode I picked was Tinker Tenor, Doctor Spy, which is episode 4 from season 6. So relatively far along in the Doctor development. And I think it's a good one for that because it shows, like, yes, he's gotten to a certain point, but he still wants to go further and how that creates a issue for the crew and the captain of what to do about the Doctor.
Mm-hmm. And even though I thought I had rewatched all of the Voyager episodes, that one was not familiar to me when I watched it again. So I wonder if I was Netflixing through a bunch and fell asleep or something.
Yes, that's the old Netflix and nap.
That's right.
I have done that.
When chill becomes nap.
Yes.
Then you wake up and you're like, what? How many seasons? How many episodes did I miss? Oh, I enjoyed it thoroughly, though.
Yeah. I mean, it starts out so well with the Doctor singing from the famous Verdi opera, Rigoletto, La Donna e Mobile.
But then having him like do the words on the fly about the whole palm far and resolving the situation.
Yes.
And kind of at the very beginning, you're sucked in. You're thinking, oh, this is the beginning of like a normal old episode. But then towards the end, it just gets kind of sillier and sillier in a sense. And you're like, maybe this isn't really quite what's going on.
He performs this amazing aria. He manages to disarm Tuvok while singing. And because Tuvok was losing his mind, probably from the opera. And then then everybody just like, jumps up applauding and admiring. When you get that look on Janeway's face where she's like, her eyes are big in admiration for the Doctor, that's when it's like, this is probably some kind of dream sequence.
Exactly. That was a great start to the episode. I thought that the way that they kind of incorporated his daydreaming in that episode with the villains actually worked very well also. It didn't seem too contrived, maybe a little, but not too. It was very enjoyable. It was very enjoyable to watch. The daydreams, which I think pretty much all of them had everybody on the cast able to do a nice bit of overacting.
Yes.
Which was just amusing to see. I thought it was also interesting just revealing, very explicitly that the Doctor has the capacity for romance, right?
Yes.
And being attracted to other beings.
I have to admit, when I suggested this episode, I remembered the opera and I remembered the alien race, tapping into the Doctor's daydreams. Mm-hmm. And I didn't remember all of this, what is really kind of in that category of Star Trek sexual harassment holodeck. This isn't a holodeck show, but it's a daydream show. And they do like mm-hmm. project his daydreams into the holodeck. And I think the fact is I like the Doctor so much and I like this episode so much that I repressed the parts that made me a little squeamish and forgot about all the women wanting to the female characters fighting over the Doctor, and also totally forgot about the Doctor painting Seven of Nine in the nude, because that's not great. The one bit in that painting scene that is very funny, though, it's like Janeway is kind of standing in for the rest of us when she looks at it, and she says, well, he does the hands very well.
Yes.
And she lets us off the hook. We can't see the painting, or at least we can't see naked Seven of Nine, thank goodness. But she makes it as if, oh, we are looking at the hands, and now let's leave this tableau, because it's a little hollow creepy.
It is definitely a little hollow creepy. And then the Doctor at the end being mortified that so many people on the crew have seen his daydreams and fantasies was also, I don't know, interesting telling.
Yeah. Now, there is a fun thing right at the end where Seven does give him a kiss on the cheek and says, like, that's totally platonic and you're never painting me, so forget about it.
That's right.
In my mind, I don't think they need it quite that level of Doctor, you know, fantasizing about the women quite on that, in that way. Like, you know, it could have, but whatever. It is what it is. And the episode, and it does, I do like the episode a lot. I think I'm like the Doctor. I what's the word? I deleted that subroutine from my brain.
I see.
Where I forgot that there were these awkward bits.
I was definitely eye-rolling my way through those scenes. But on the other hand, I was also thinking this definitely is not outside of the Doctor's character.
No.
To think, you know, he's kind of this Lothario kind of being.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my favorite moment in that episode had nothing to do with the Doctor himself, but it was when he thinks that the warp core is going to breach.
Yeah.
And the computer, warning, warp core breach a lot sooner than you think. That was the best.
Yeah, I was.
which yeah. did two things. One, it was very funny. But second, like, it clearly signaled that this was another daydream.
Yes.
And then there was a second one where it was like, warning, last chance to be a hero, Doctor. Get going. But yeah. Her voice kind of broke on that one. She sounded less like the computer and she sounded more like, what's her name?
Midge L. Barrett.
But when I heard warning, warp core breach, a lot sooner than you think.
Yes.
Like, I laughed out loud on that one.
Yeah. It was a good, as you say, it was a good way to let you know the scene was a fantasy scene. But I also would have loved to see when Majel got those lines, because she's been the computer voice all throughout and so many lines, and they're all straight. And I wonder if that's her first chance to do a comic line as the computer.
That I don't remember. I don't recall hearing the computer do a humorous line before. So, And possibly after what? How many seasons of Next Generation and how many seasons of Voyager to get to this point? Maybe that's what made it particularly funny, is that it's so unexpected.
Yeah.
There was one other thing about the Doctor as a character that I found interesting. A little bit in this episode. But just in general, was that he had a penchant for taking holographic images.
Yes.
Right. So the thing that has always, recently kind of fascinated me is that, right, we live in the smartphone age. We take hundreds upon hundreds of photos all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was never anything taking photos in the original series, Next Generation. You'd show up on a planet. You'd have a tricorder. Would you record any images of where you were? None. Right? Whereas, you know, like we know now, human nature, there'd be selfies of people on Ryza and all over the place, but nothing. No, you don't. It's not until we get to the doctor that we even know they have a separate device for taking holographic images, as far as I know.
Yeah, it is weird because they're always collecting images, you know, from like they have probes and things to collect images from the surface, like, but taking snapshots like on the ground. I never thought about that before. That's pretty interesting. That camera cracks me up. I mean, it looks like a 1950s,
right?
You know, newsman's camera with should have a flash bulb in it.
Well, I'm assuming that it takes a lot of technology to create a holographic image as opposed to just a regular one. That's the, but yes, it does. It always amused me how large that thing was. I found it fascinating that we never hear about imagery, right, of an advanced sort until we get to the doctor in Voyager, because I think he's the only one that really takes holographic images.
Yes, so he can torture his friends with slideshows later.
I wonder who put that subroutine in.
So the show starts out with the doctor submitting complaints to mm-hmm. Janeway about the way he's treated and his requests for various, you know, different considerations. But the main one is that he wants to be considered to be the emergency command hologram if the captain and the rest of the command structure is decimated. He should be the one to take over. And that does figure into his daydreams. He imagines himself. Well, I mean, there's two funny things in here. That there's a Borg attack, and that was really well done, like I thought, where it starts out where there's just this bit of Borg technology taking over Tuvok, and then Chakotay is also being assimilated, and Janeway gets knocked out, right? And it's time for the emergency command hologram, you know. Activate the emergency command hologram, says the doctor, and his uniform turns red. And then they do that great little detail of showing the pips on his collar. And there he is in charge. And that's when you know, of course, we know there's no emergency command hologram, so you're pretty sure there's no Borg either. But the Borg say, you know, we are the Borg.
Right.
Resistance is futile. And he's like, I know who you are. That's a great doctor line. And he tells him he's going to activate the photonic cannon. And I'm like, do I know what a photonic cannon is? And of course, it's another thing that he's fantasized about. And then he blows the Borg out of the sky with this non-existent photonic cannon. Mm-hmm. So that's really fun to watch. Because wouldn't that be great if you could do that to the Borg? And the doctor looks good in red, but at the same time, the alien ships that have been spying on Voyager, that's what they see. And they think, uh-oh, this ship is really, really dangerous.
Absolutely. And I think it's also an interesting episode because it's very rarely does a Star Trek episode actually do we have an unreliable narrator?
Uh-huh.
Right. Sometimes we do on occasion, but it's a pretty rare episode. And in this case, it's kind of a double whammy in that there's the unreliable narrator of what reality is actually happening from the doctor's point of view, but also then that unreliable narration is passed on to the aliens that are trying to hijack Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only unreliable to us as the watcher of the show, but it's also unreliable to the villains in the episode, which is, I think, pretty cleverly done.
Yeah, it's a great episode for the Doctor because he does get to do so many of his strengths. I mean, his acting like a captain is really, I mean, he does a really good job at it. You could picture Robert Picardo as a captain straight of a Star Trek ship if he wanted to be. But he also, he develops this little relationship with the alien, which was kind of funny because they have some things in common. So this alien later sees, he finally realizes that the doctor is daydreaming. You know, when the crew realizes he's daydreaming and the doctor goes into this like manic state of just daydream, switching into daydream, switching into daydream. The guy on the alien ship, his name is Phlox, according to Memory Alpha. I don't remember him having a name, but he's suddenly concerned that everything he's told his shipmates and their upper management that about Voyager is not true, and he needs to figure out a way out of it. And his idea is to tell the doctor, I need you to pretend to be the captain, and I will give you the frequency codes of their phasers so that you can defend yourself. And that way I won't get in trouble and you won't get destroyed. And the doctor, of course, is skeptical, but that Phlox says to him, like, well, I just don't want to, you know, see you get hurt or the ship. I've actually come to really like you, and you've been inspiring me to think beyond, like, my lot in life, that I could be more than I am today. And of course, the doctor likes inspiring people. He wants to be a role model. So that works. And he wins the doctor over. That leads into the final scene where it's not a daydream anymore. The doctor actually has to be the captain. And of course, he's rightfully nervous. And I think Janeway and the others are kind of enjoying having seen his daydreams, now that he has to actually put that into reality, that it's a little harder when you're actually doing it in real life. And Janeway has a microphone. She's talking him through it, but that's not going very well because he's too nervous. And just when it seems like the doctor has blown it and Janeway is telling him to negotiate, he suddenly, you know, it comes over him, you know, a command personality. And and that works really well, I think. Once he could, like, get over his nervousness and put on his high doctor, you know, bombasticness, which he's good at, he saves the day, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. He definitely saves the day and kind of ends up bringing the plot full circle, because even though there are so many of these humorous episodes that happen throughout the show, it does still get back to this serious question of the doctor being able to continue to kind of improve and grow and possibly grow into a command position, at least temporarily. So he definitely does extend his abilities. And I think Captain Janeway also has a change in her mindset about him.
Yes, she has a changed view of him throughout this, a truly changed, not fantasy change view. And that is kind of funny at the end where they call him into the mess hall and he is greeted by everybody cheering for him and they're in dress uniforms. And Kim has to say to him, like, it's not a daydream, because it looks like one of his daydreams. And of course, they know what his daydreams look like, so they kind of they kind of brought it to life. But yes, I think it's a nice ending. There is a two-part episode in season 7 called Workforce, where the whole crew is kidnapped to become laborers on a planet. And it does leave the doctor in charge, and the emergency command hologram comes back. So I think that's kind of fun. And if you haven't seen this episode and you see Workforce, you wouldn't know the exciting background to that evolution of the doctor. The doctor makes a pretty good captain.
Yes.
I think this episode brings out a lot of the facets of the doctor's character. And when you take all those facets together, I think it makes it pretty clear why everyone likes the doctor. He's funny. He's smart. He's kind. And he can take charge if he needs to. I think, you know, Voyager was lucky to have this character that was so unusual, the only holographic character that I know of in regular Star Trek series, right?
As far as I know, yes.
Yes.
We had no other regular holographs. Holograms? Holograph? What's a holograph? Yeah, and I think they also cast the role very well with an actor who was able to play that range incredibly well.
Yes. Yeah.
And I just always enjoy him. And there are many times when they don't focus on the fact where, at least for me, I forget that he is a hologram of a character.
It was interesting that at some point they had to get him a mobile emitter or else that character wasn't going anywhere, literally and figuratively. So
yes, but it was even there, it was an arc, right? Where first they put emitters in different spots in the ship.
Yeah.
To get him out of sick bay. And then finally they figured out that nice device of the mobile emitter.
Yes, from the nice device from the 29th century.
That's right. Both a physical device, but also a plot device, right?
Yes. Yeah, I sometimes wonder if they created the two-parter Futures End, where they go back to 1990s Earth and meet some time traveler. They did the entire episode just to get the mobile emitter into the mix. Well, James, I really appreciate you coming on to Voyager Revisited, and I hope you enjoyed revisiting some of our favorite things about Voyager, especially our favorite things about the Doctor.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun chatting about the Doctor and Voyager, and I wish you all the best with your podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm excited about it. And thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. Follow us on Twitter and on micro.blog at voyager_cast. This show is one of the many pop culture podcasts found on the Incomparable Network. I will be back in 2 weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. Until then, time's up.